discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and Kenny prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Strowman out for 6 months is the question that will lead us on this original recipe episode of Inside the Ropes. I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the man who teaches the next generation of children, Robert D for Dangerous Duffin.
D for Dangerous, that's a wonderful intro, thank you. Why? Yeah, the Braun Strowman thing. Who would have thought 12 months ago, like, we'd be that sad. Shattered elbow, by the way. Apparently they didn't know until he went in and he did the surgery last Thursday. And they were like, your elbow's shattered, mate. and now he's going to be out 6 months, probably November. So I guess maybe Survivor Series return. Maybe they'll hold off to the Royal Rumble. I mean, if they could hold him that long and then have him come out and win it, that'd be crazy. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. It's just a shame that he's not going to be headlining Great Balls of Fire with Brock Lesnar. So yeah, it kind of sucks, but a big testament to how far he's come, how well they've done in presenting him, and how hard he's worked to become something more than what he was even just a year ago, where he was, you know, garbage. But now he's like so good, and everybody loves him. But I think, I don't know if I said this on the podcast or whether I just said this to you, but somebody said to me, he said, "You only like Braun Strowman because he's beaten up Roman Reigns. So what's going to happen when he stops beating up Roman Reigns?" And my response was, "Who says he has to stop?"
Why ruin a good thing?
Why ruin a good thing? As long as Roman's around, Braun can be. I can't, because you just know that when he comes back, he has to come straight back for Reigns.
Yeah, he has to.
Like, it's the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote thing going on with those two. So, yeah, get well soon, Brawny baby.
Brawny baby. We've got a ton to talk about in this episode. You know, Sandra and I do SmackDown, David and I do Raw, but this is like, we can actually talk about stuff that's happening in wrestling. We're obviously going to cover the Randy Orton, Bubba Ray, indie wrestling dive situation, which Robert is thrilled to talk about. We're then going to go from that to something that I'm thrilled to talk about, which is the potential idea that Hulk Hogan is going into Big Fucking Brother.
I'm more excited about that.
I was in the car with my mum and I was like, my mum was like, "Kenneth, guess what?" And I was like, "Hulk Hogan's gonna be in Big Brother." And she was like, "Isn't it amazing?" I was like, "No, it's not." Mum, do you know that Robert has agreed? And she even knows what a flaky podcaster you are, right? And
yeah.
She was like, I said, "Do you know that Robert said that if Hulk Hogan's in Big Brother, he will do a nightly podcast to recap over all the previous night's events?" And she laughed and went, "Why wouldn't he, though?"
Exactly. Exactly.
Maybe you should podcast with my mum about it. Maybe that's the way to go.
Me, yes, and Kenny's mum doing Big Brother's Little Brother, brother. It would be brilliant. I'm genuinely serious, because I think that would be too much fun. I mean, when a man like him has cameras on him 24 hours, you know, it's only going to be so long. Because here's the thing as well, he'll probably win. Like, I kind of think he probably would win just because of who he is. Like, I don't think the racism thing is something that, like, wrestling fans know about it, but I don't think the casual person on the street, the man on the street who would watch Celebrity Big Brother in the UK would necessarily remember or even have heard that happened, because it was big for wrestling fans, that scandal. But I don't know, it wasn't like front page of the papers in the UK big, which is what this will be. But
we'll get to that in full time, and we've got different topics to do. But also, Robert, I figured that since you were on the podcast, it's the original recipe. We need to go all out, right? Because we need to make sure that we're better than those Americans, right? So we're pulling out two big guns. The first big gun is that we are going to read through some of the script for Pandemonium, the story of Vince McMahon.
Oh, yes.
Now, Robert has not seen the snippets of the script that I've sent to him, and we will act those out later on for your enjoyment. But I thought first what we could do is, this used to be a big hit on the podcast back in the day when Robert could be bothered to be here all the time, and...
I thought we had called a truth on this kind of activity.
We did call a truth. To be fair,
but if you're taking pot shots, I just want to say to all people that voted for Kenny, notice how as soon as I had to take a break because I had to go help children, he immediately outsourced UK jobs to foreign workers. And I think that's our thing that people did not call him out on enough, by the way. Anyway.
It's a fair point, to be fair. But... So before we get into anything, one of the most successful segments on Inside the Ropes used to be a very successful segment called Over to You.
Oh God!
This might be difficult, people. So Robert, slow it down. Explain the idea of Over to You.
Right. Okay. So people who are checking out the old shows just now, God help you. Some of the stuff we must have said back then. The first time we ever did that certain segment that used to end the show, you know the one I mean. You made me cut, like, I came up with, if someone goes back and listens to the very first, pardon me, the very first time we did that, I came up with this one on the spot, like you were like, and we're going to go to a segment now where we read silly comments off of Facebook, and Robert, it's called, and I just went there. And I called it that. And then one time, you had one job, where we were doing let's just do a thing where we ask the people, who are listening to send us some topics for conversation, that'll be good. What will we call that? I'd be like, I don't know, Kenny, you'll come up with something really good. And next on Inside the Ropes, it's Over to You. But needless to say, I think when the classic episodes roll around to that one, you can sort of hear my vocal discomfort with it. but it's sort of gone all the way around from being so naff, it's actually now what we like to call it. Over to You.
Oh God,
big hit.
So we're gonna do that. But before we get to that, Robert, you were a big brave boy today, and you went to the dentist. And you told me that, you know, you didn't have the greatest time at the dentist. I want you to, you know, take the floor, Robert. There's thousands of people right now who are hanging on your every word because they've fallen in love with you. People who hadn't heard you before have heard you since you come back, and they love how sort of like curmudgeonly and upfront about how much you hate things that you are. So tell us what happened.
Well, I kind of do feel that talking about anything medical related, people are just going to like do me for gimmick infringement, because they're like, dentist, well, it's not exactly two heart surgeries, is it, Robert? And I'll be like, no, but you know what, we'll get into it. So basically, for those of you new, which I would say is about 50% of the audience who apparently all arrived in the 6 months that I wasn't here. I'm a total, like, anxiety mess of a person. So, and that can manifest in many ways. You know, I get very anxious sometimes in certain social situations, and anything health related, anything Jinder Mahal related, you know, anything can trigger me. And, one of the things particularly bad is health related stuff. So I'm the kind of person, if I get a headache, I'm not like, oh, it's just a wee headache. I'll just have a wee tablet, and I'll be okay. I'm immediately kind of like, oh my God, it's a brain hemorrhage. Right? That's where my mind goes. I can't help it. That's where it goes. So, like last week, I had this sort of inflamed gum. Now, obviously, instead of being like, could have been a piece of food caught in my gum that wasn't brushed out properly, which is gross, I apologise. Or, you know, could be my wisdom tooth coming through, because obviously I'm very wise. No, I'm immediately like, oh my god, I need to go to the dentist immediately because I've got terminal gum cancer. I didn't even know that's a real thing, but that's what I thought I had. So I finally went to the dentist today, and I was shitting it all day, like, oh, oh. I was, you know, unloading onto my pupils. Like, I'd be kind of like, oh, you have a nice weekend, Mr. Duff? Not really, guys. I'm going to be honest. I think I might have terminal gum cancer. not really. I didn't actually tell them that. So then I went, and I just, this happens all the time. It's like, I went to the doctors like 2 years ago because I thought I had diabetes. I didn't. But I thought I did. And I always realise when I'm in the process of telling the medical professional my problem, I can just see their eyes look to the door, like going, how quickly can I escape? Can I get past this person? Because he's obviously mental. And so I had to say to the dentist, like, oh, I've got like this gum inflammation thing. Actually, it's sort of almost all gone now, but I need you to look at it to see what's happening. And it was nothing, of course. It was nothing. Or if it was something, it's gone away now. So it's not a thing. But somehow, you can go to the dentist thinking you've got terminal gum cancer, get told that you don't, and still leave £100 lighter. And as I said to you on Twitter, you always rid me for losing my smile. I can't lose my smile because it's financially unviable. Okay, it's not like it's not allowed. No more losing my smile because I can't afford it. Basically,
you have pretty good teeth though.
They're okay, thank you. But it went in and he was like, "Oh, but while we're here, like one of your old fillings. Like, how old is that filling?" And I was just, and I actually wanted to spit right in his face because I said, oh, I think I might have got that when I was 15. He was like, wow, nearly 20 years. I was like, fuck you.
Being age shamed while you're lying on a fucking like, table. Oh. Did he make you put on those awful goggles?
No, I didn't have to wear the goggles.
Oh.
So he's like, we're going to have to replace that. And he's like, I've got time now to do it. So, I mean, you might as well do it. I mean, you might as well. And I was like, oh, okay, put your needle in my gum and get through with it. And then he's like, I'm going to give you a scale and polish as well because there's quite a bit of plaque buildup behind your front teeth. And I was like, how dare you? Like, I brush twice a day, three times if I have a particularly messy meal at lunch. So I don't floss because who's got time for that? But anyway, that's probably where I got the plaque. And then he went in and it's the most painful thing ever. So he did the filling. And that was fine, because I've had fillings before, like, no big deal, whatever. You can put whatever you want in my mouth, I'm going to know. Anyway, so... terrible, terrible sentence.
I really wish you'd went down that garden path.
Well, and then he did the scale and polish, and it was so painful. And now, like, I can't help but, like, run my tongue over the back of my front teeth, because I'm like, oh my god, look, I didn't really realise, it was just so satisfying to get them really clean. But yeah, £100?
Like, that's
a lot of money.
Why have you charged, like, you can get that done for like 40 quid. How have you been charged 100?
It was 100 because I had to pay for the appointment.
How much for the appointment?
Well, I don't know. Like, you have to pay, don't you? You have to pay something just to go.
No.
A base. Yeah, there's like a base payment. Maybe no matter what happens.
Shafted.
It's only like maybe a tenner or something, I don't know. And then I had to pay for the two x-rays. They were 15 quid each. For both sides of my mouth, I was like, couldn't you just do one and just, you know, take a gamble, the other side's okay? And then there's the polish thing, and then there was the filling. So, all in all, I mean, I'm glad I don't have the terminal gum cancer, but I also do like £100. I don't have that either, so I don't really know how to feel. But it's, I'm glad because I thought we were going to have to podcast earlier on, and I was really numbed up because... I don't know why. He went really heavy on the Novocaine, which I thought was a bit unnecessary. But and the,
see, I thought you were going to end up like JR at WrestleMania 15 or something.
Controversial. Controversial, Kenny. As someone who has been on stage with him. Controversial. But there's a 50-50 thing. I was walking home. Also, right, so whatever he used for the scale and polish, right, mm-hmm. It made my lips go blue. Not like I wasn't having hypothermia or something. Like, it was just whatever the liquid stuff was or whatever he was using. Made my lips go blue. Didn't give me a heads up as I was leaving. I gave him £100 and he couldn't say to me, like, by the way, the kind of 10-minute walk back to your flat, anybody walking past you thinks you get, you know, performed oral sex on a Smurf. But you look horrific. But no, I didn't notice till I got home. Big blue lip fuck. But anyway, it was really, it was a good experience all in, and I'm glad that, I'm glad I went. And basically, today's podcast is sponsored by Corsodil mouthwash.
if it makes you feel any better, I think you and I are quite similar in this way. You know how, like, you were saying, whenever something happens, you think that you're like dying immediately.
Yeah.
Well, like, when I was in Canada, I was like, I had the shakes one day, like my hands were shaking, and my mom's a nurse, so I automatically think that she can fix everything or at least know the answer, right? Like, she went to fucking nursing school, she should know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Mom, my hand's shaking. Does that mean I've got Parkinson's? And and like she tells that story at parties now, which is really funny. I'm like, it could have happened. And like I said to her, if I end up getting Parkinson's in later age, I detected it early and she didn't notice. She fobbed me off. So
neglect
by Big Fiona.
So yeah, I can say this. one of the other teachers in school. So I opened up to them all at one time, and they were like, "Why are you so nervous at the dentist?" And I was like, "Well, guys, anxious mess about all things in life." And then anyway, so they were like, "Oh, you'll be fine. Like, don't worry about it. It'll just be a wisdom tooth or something normal. Like, it'll be something totally normal." And I went, "Yeah, you're right." And then I went to go tell like my boss person that I was leaving, because I had to leave before the end of last period to make the appointment. And I was like, "I'm going now. Like, I don't have any classes just now, so I'm away to the dentist." And she was like, "Good." I was like, "Hopefully it'll be okay. Ha ha ha." And she went, "Well, you know, 10 years ago, my mum went to the dentist and they found like a skin cancer lesion on her upper palate. So it's always good to go.
Fuck.
See you tomorrow." And I was just like, "Are you kidding?" And guess what? That lady is an ex-nurse.
Jesus.
And she's like, I'm being like, "Oh, I'm really nervous about this." And she's like, "Oh yeah, one time someone I knew went to the dentist and they had mouth cancer." "Well, thanks. Thanks a bunch. My voice is all I have. Teaching, podcasting. I mean, if I lost my voice, I guess I'd get by on my looks. But, you know, without the voice, it's not the total package." Anyway, we've talked a lot about
your dentistry, yeah. Well, so the one question that's on everybody's mind, you know, it's we've got Pranjal and Alexandria and various other people in the deep talking about Braun and being out for potentially 6 months. Who do you want to see Braun? Who takes the spot of Braun going up against Lesnar in your eyes? Who would you like it to be?
Who takes the spot going up against Lesnar? So we're talking about like this sort of early summer feud.
Yeah, because Brock's confirmed that he returns on the June 12th Raw, and he's pretty much around all summer.
Gosh, like, Raw is not strong on viable babyface wrestlers to go up against Lesnar, really, is it? I mean,
it's Balor or Rollins, right? It's one of those two.
Yeah, it's Balor or Rollins, and I guess Balor is the fresher match, although Rollins and Lesnar never really got their match, because at the point where they had that pay-per-view match, was that like summer 2015? It was really all just a gimmick, because...
Battlegrounds for Undertaker.
Yeah, Battlegrounds, yeah. One of the best Battlegrounds ever. Maybe. Yeah, because Seth was still doing the chicken shit thing. I didn't want to wrestle him. And then The Undertaker turned out with his heady back. So I think that... both of those, I don't really... Maybe... If we're talking like Great Balls of Fire, etc., maybe go for Rollins. I'd maybe go Rollins and save... I don't really want a totally fresh match to be a substitute. So substitute a guy in who's kind of worked with him before. You know it's going to be good. And maybe save the match with Finn Balor for, I don't know, SummerSlam maybe?
Yeah, I'd like to see Balor, Lesnar, SummerSlam. There's something about... Because remember when Lesnar worked with Punk? It was such a good match because it was like
very
Lesnar
good.
And a small guy. And he's not really got to work with a small guy for a long time.
No, and Balor's like even smaller than Punk.
Yeah, so they could do some dynamite stuff. The thing about Braun, and trust me, nobody loves Braun Strowman more than I do, and I can't believe I do love him as much as I do, but I kind of think that in a way, it's a bit of a blessing in disguise for him, because it feels like what probably was the plan was, you know, he loses to Lesnar and then jobs to Roman, and that's maybe just his thing he's got to do. But by him leaving and people missing him, and then when he comes back, like, I feel that could be a better spot for him at that point. You know,
yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I suppose I look at it like, you know, guy's not going to make the money he could make while he's at his hottest. He's kind of been cut down in a sort of a real golden patch for him, which absolutely sucks. But like you say, he is leaving at the point where people like him the most. And if they capitalise on that return, which they've got a spotty record on capitalising on returns recently, but if they do it well, he could come back as a really big star. So that would be good. He could come back more powerful than ever.
And Paul Kerr wants to know, what do we think is going to be the main event of SummerSlam? I've got a theory of what I think is going to be the main event of SummerSlam.
Okay, shoot.
I think the main event of SummerSlam is a SmackDown match. I think it's Nakamura and Cena.
Oh.
Because I think they want to do Nakamura AJ at WrestleMania. And that's probably the plan. Because everybody wants that match. And I'm like, well, who Cena's going to come back for SummerSlam. Who does Cena go up against on the SmackDown side of things? Like, it just feels like Nakamura is the match. Like, that's the big story for SmackDown.
Who goes over there?
Well, I mean, we know who should go over, but I don't know. I don't know how you... I mean, Cena could go over, so could Nakamura. It's kind of... You can't really call it, which I think is one of the good things about it. It's not really...
I think we know who needs it more.
Oh, yeah, Nakamura needs it more, for sure. But... Yeah, what do you think? What do you think the SummerSlam main event? What's your gut?
I think it's going to be whatever Brock's doing. Because they're going to want to sort of front that Universal Championship over the summer while it's there. Because I don't think they like the fact that it's not around. So maybe it's Brock Balor. But then you could go to the old double main event and do the...
Hell of a double.
Hell of a double, yeah. Do the Brock Balor and Nakamura Cena, possibly. But it's so early to tell. Who knows who'll get injured between now and then.
Sean Lindsay had asked about this, and we both, I think, watched this today. The trailer came out for the Netflix series Glow.
Yes.
What did you think of it?
I've been... I liked it. I've been following this for a little while because I'm a big fan of the podcaster and comedian Marc Maron. Who is in the show. He plays...
Like the producer-director guy?
Yeah, he's like the promoter. He's like the promoter for Glow. So he mentioned that maybe like a year ago on his podcast that he had auditioned for it. Or within the last 12 months anyway, if not a year. And so I was into the idea of it. I also had this kind of bizarre thing because Kate Nash is in it. You know, like the
Community?
British singer?
No, but who's the Community girl that's in it?
Oh, Brie Larson.
Brie Larson.
But, yeah, Kate Nash, she sang, you know, the Foundation song.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you must eat so many lemons because you are so bitter. That lady from, like, 10 years ago. She's in it, and I was just like, what? That's weird. So, just the idea of it all kind of, it sounds great. Netflix stuff is usually fairly consistent in its quality. So, I'm really, really looking forward to it, actually. I'm really looking forward to it.
You see, I hadn't seen... I'd heard it was going to be happening, and then I just watched the trailer this morning. And, you know, a trailer can be very deceiving, right? Like, sometimes a trailer's great and the show's shit, or the trailer's shit and the show's good. But I watched the trailer and I was like, I'm in. I think it looks really good.
It's kind of fun as well, because Madden has become... Like, he's not a wrestling fan, but he... I first started listening to his show summer 2013, because he had interviewed Colt Cabana as sort of, because he's, you know, he'll interview someone who's like a fairly big podcast personality, and Cabana was.
Didn't he do Jericho or Punk at one point as well?
He did Punk as well. He did Punk later on, which is really good. It's kind of a forgotten Punk interview. If anybody's listening and hasn't, go find the WTF on YouTube with Mark Maron and CM Punk. It's pretty good. It was recorded during Punk's, like, I think it was like his last run. Sort of late 2013, I'm fairly certain. So some of it's quite telling. He just isn't going up, but he has sort of given up a little bit on the company. You can tell by some of the things he says. So, and then he did an episode of his show on ISC. He kind of had his own show for a while called Marin, and Punk and Cabana are in an episode, and they do like a wrestling thing in it. So he's not like a wrestling fan, but he's really interested in the sort of lifestyle of wrestlers being similar to the lifestyle of stand-up comics. So I think he'll bring something quite good to it. And also, Awesome Kong's in it, and Kate Nash.
I love really bizarre casting choices. It's one of my favorite things. Like something you just go, really? Because usually there's reason behind it. So yeah, I think it looks really good. And
this is a very, I'll do this very, very quickly, but you know Andrew Bartley?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, he listens to the show. He was tweeting me, and we were talking about something Mark Maron related, and I was just like being an Uber show off and sent a picture of me and him because I met him when I was in America. And I said very briefly I would tell the story of how I didn't say anything but briefly, but I'm telling you that now because I'm taking up time. But
sure.
I'd tell a very brief story of how I met him because it's quite a cool story.
Yeah, you go for it.
So basically, I was going on holiday to the States, and I booked it for my 30th birthday. And while I was in Los Angeles, Mark Maron announced that he was in a stand-up show. And he doesn't really come to the UK very often. Like, he came to London like a year or two ago for like two nights, and that was it. He doesn't really tour the UK because he's not really a big fan of, like, I think he appreciates his UK fan base, but he's had some quite bad experiences in the past at like the Edinburgh Comedy Festival. So anyway, he doesn't do many tours. So I was just like, oh wow, he's doing a show while I'm there. I should try and get a ticket for it. But tickets were like $30, which I thought was totally reasonable. And it was at the, oh, it's a really famous theatre. It'll come to me. The Largo at the Coronet.
How did this get made there, right? The Largo?
Yes, they do. So it's like a real kind of hub for that, for the kind of comedy stuff. And I was just kind of like, oh dear, the two folk that I was going away with, I was kind of going, $30 is not a lot. But he's not the kind of comedian, I feel like, you know, your mileage may vary. Like, I love him, but I'm totally accepting of the fact that people might not dig a stand-up. It might not be their kind of humour. So I thought, it's very risky for like a night of a holiday to say to people, let's you should all come to this thing that they might not like. So, I mean, obviously, if he was here, I would recommend it to people, but, you know, you're going on holiday, you don't want to waste any time. So I thought, I'm not going to do it. Maybe I just won't go. And then it turned out that the other two guys that I was away with, they got, one of them won like a ticket lottery to get tickets to go to see Jimmy Kimmel, do his show. And he was like, oh, we're going to go to see Kimmel. And I was like, okay, that's quite cool. I'll settle for that. But then it turned out you could only get two in the lottery. You couldn't get three. Mm-hmm. So I was like, fuck it. I was like, you guys go see Jimmy Kimmel. I'm going to go get a ticket. I'm just going to go by myself to see Maron. And it sold out. I was like, ah, damn it. So then between Christmas and New Year, 2014, I sent a tweet out and I tagged Maron in it. And I just said, going to be on holiday in Los Angeles from Scotland this week. Tickets are sold out. If anybody is selling a ticket to your stand-up show, can you give this a retweet and maybe they can hook me up with the ticket? I'll buy it from them. And he retweeted it. And I got like a bunch of retweets. It was really nice. Like, I got lots of retweets, but no replies. And then, really bizarrely, first of all, I got a retweet from Oscar Nunez, who plays Oscar in The Office, the American Office.
That's a life goal right there.
Wait, it gets better. It gets better. So I was just like, oh, okay, cool. Because I was like, is that really him or is it just someone using his photo? You know, like, you know, some wrestling fans will have, like, I don't know, Finn Balor as a Twitter picture or something. And I went, oh, no, shit, it's actually him. And he retweeted it, and he was like, you know, I'll help the guy out. And then it got retweeted by Judd Apatow, who said in the retweet, Mark, he's coming all the way from Scotland. Hook him up, for fuck's sake, or something like that. And I was just like, oh, that's really funny. And then I got a DM on Twitter from this really nice woman who works for Maron in New York. And she was just like, Robert, if you follow me, no, she sent me a tweet first. She was like, Robert, follow me. I might be able to help you out. I didn't know who she was. I was like, oh, she's probably just some lady selling tickets. Brilliant. I'll be able to get one off her. And then I followed her and she DM'd me and she was like, oh, I work for Mark in New York. I can put you on the guest list so that you can go for free. I was just like, oh my God, that's amazing. So Judd Apatow, I guess I owe him one. But then again, I did watch Funny People, so maybe we're even.
I think you're equal now. I think it ties out.
But the... Anyway, so I went to the show, and it was really good, and he did like 2 hours. He was on for ages. And then there's a little kind of courtyard out at the Largo, and I walked out afterwards because I was going to go meet my friends I was there with, and he was just hanging around, and I went over and spoke to him for a little bit and had a chat and took a photo, and he was really nice, and I sort of told him you retweeted my thing, and then Judd Apatow, and he was like, oh yeah, yeah, like, he's like, you got in, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, yeah, sorted. And it was really nice, and that was the story of how I met Mark Maron, the podcaster who will also be in the wrestling Netflix show Glow, so it's not a complete tangent.
It's a very good story.
I think it's quite a fun story. And so there you go.
Not as good as the story when you became a Scientologist, but it's up there.
We'll save that for another time. We'll do a Patreon story time with Robert.
We are obviously going to talk about the Randy Orton situation. We're going to talk about Hulk Hogan. But we do have a couple other topics that people are chatting about. Also, if you might be able to hear in the background the noise of dishes happening, because the flat that I live in decided that it would be a really great idea to not have a kitchen door. Because that's really good, and especially when you're podcasting, it's like perfect. So if you hear
it adds ambiance.
I don't think it does, but I appreciate the effort. So we also have some other questions here. Oliver Drake wants to know, what do we think about the WWE UK Championship show? Also, I know that somebody else asked us about UK title thing. I can't find it here. But anyway, yeah, the UK Championship show coming up on Friday, which includes the Pete Dunne and Trent Seven number one contenders match. To see who goes on to face Tyler Bate at TakeOver.
So they've already spoiled on NXT.
Which they have, yeah, because it could be Pete Dunne. JR and Nigel McGuinness are going to be calling... My God, these dishes. JR and Nigel McGuinness are going to be calling the show on Friday, and they're also going to be calling the UK title match at TakeOver. What do you think about the way they're presenting this UK Championship stuff now that we're, like, you know, 5 months removed from the original special in Blackpool?
It's taken a long time to get this off the ground. Longer than I thought. Maybe they've taken the foot off the gas a little bit because, I mean, it was somewhat of a reactionary thing to ITV's World of Sport show, which it just was, you know. And now that has sort of hit some speed bumps. I know they had some taping plans that were cancelled. And, you know, they've obviously... got JR on board now. He's jumped ship from World of Sport to WWE UK. So it's taken a while, and I'm just not really sure about not doing it live or coming over and just literally recording. You know, how like what did they do? Two nights?
Yeah, they did two nights. So I don't know how they're going to structure two nights.
Two nights in Norwich, longer than anybody wants to be there. Joking. That's just for Tom Downey.
By the way, it was totally coincidental that the Knights live in that city. Don't you be spreading rumours, Rob. I know what you're like.
I know.
I'd love to see a documentary of you and the Knights.
Me and the Knights?
Just like hanging about. Imagine if like you were like, you know, an executive producer for WAW. It'd just be great to watch your facial expressions the whole time.
It's interesting, isn't it? I went to see a movie last week, this is related, called 2 weeks ago, called Lady Macbeth. It's nothing to do with Shakespeare or Macbeth, it's just called that, because the woman in it's like a manipulative bitch. And I didn't know the actress who played the main character, but she was tremendous. I was just like, oh my God, like, she's brilliant. I wonder what she's going to be doing next. I can't remember her name. But anyway, turns out that she's playing Paige in the Fighting for My Family, whatever it's called.
Yeah, Fighting for My Family.
And then I actually had this moment where I thought, because in Lady Macbeth, she, you know, gets a little naked. And I was just like, oh, wow. I thought WWE would be a wee bit funny about casting you an actress who's been in another movie who, you know, she's all in the nude. And then I was like, oh, she's playing Paige. they've got bigger things to worry about. Whether the actress who played her... was naked in a movie. Oh dear, that's a mess, isn't it? I sort of missed all this Paige and Alberto stuff, but let's not get into it. yeah, the UK thing, I'm looking forward to watching it. I just think that There's no point recording it and then broadcasting it 2 weeks later. I just don't. I think we live in an era of where you know, you thrive if you're live. And
I also think it's tough as well to, like, so for example, Robert and I are actually going to be getting together on Saturday night to watch Takeover. Because, you know, Robert's a school teacher, so we can't sit and watch Backlash, but, you know, watch Takeover. But, like, it's a lot to ask fans, I think, to watch the UK thing on the Friday night, and then the Takeover on the Saturday night, and then the pay-per-view on the Sunday night, and then Raw on the Monday night, and then SmackDown on the Tuesday night.
I've seen a lot of people that are quite excited about that run. I mean...
Oh, no, but like, I feel
it is
like,
horrifying.
I feel like it's just, like, it's a long stretch of time to keep people... Like, because when we were at WrestleMania this year, like, by the time I got to SmackDown, like, I was still excited and stuff, but, like, it was a tough slog. You know, there was so much wrestling. I know I was going to it all rather than actually sitting in the house, but, you know, there's not... I think there's a lot of people who, you know, like, say, for example, I'll probably not be in on Friday night, so I don't know if I'm going to have the chance to watch the UK thing before Saturday night when we hang out, so... I wonder how many other people are in the same position. Like maybe they should, I just think maybe if they put it on like the Thursday night or the Wednesday night, it could have been a nice little, you know, bit of a... I mean, it'd be quite cool if that Wednesday night, it led into NXT. And that
yeah, that's you, true, yeah. And I just think... But I also just... I think they need... It can't just be like a thing that happens once every 5 months for 2 hours and, you know, and the UK Championship turns up sometimes in indies and then occasionally on NXT and, you know, I mean, I like that it bleeds into NXT. I think that's probably the most comfortable place for it. If it's going to bleed into any show, I don't particularly want to see them, you know, turning up on the main roster quite yet, because I think they might be sort of marginalised a wee bit like the cruiserweights are, because all the guys in the UK tournament are sort of relatively small, even like kind of the biggest guys. Like, you know, like if Wolfgang's your biggest man in the UK show, you know, he's not WWE huge. He's kind of about normal in WWE land.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
He looks huge when he's in the ring with Tyler Bate, but if he was in the ring with, you know, people like Killian Dane or something, I think they're about the same height, aren't they? So...
Yeah, no, but I take your point. I think it's going to be a cool show, and obviously it's a tester for doing more. So I guess we'll see. It should be pretty.
Yeah, everybody should watch it though. Yeah, if they're going to look at it as a tester for doing more, then it should get support. Hopefully, it'll get high viewing numbers, and then they'll commit to something. I just thought that, you know, the commitment would have come after the UK tournament, which was, I thought, the two of the best things of television they produced all year.
Yeah, they made Pete Dunne a star. Not that he wasn't.
They made Tyler Bate a star.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I didn't really know. I just knew. I mean, I knew who most of the guys were on the show, but Tyler Bate, he was the other guy in Mustache Mountain. I'd never seen him live before. And by the time that first night went off the air, I was just like, I want that guy to win. Like, I really desperately wanted him to win the whole thing. And so it was incredibly satisfying to see it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I think that all eyes really should be on the UK title match at TakeOver, though, because I think that's two young, hungry guys who need to go out there and not only seal the show and cement themselves, but also, you know, this is arguably, you know, British wrestling's biggest export match in terms of going over, being on a WWE special event, and it's not like a UK special event. This is like an NXT show. These have become pretty big deals. I just hope they kill it.
And I think adding JR to it as well with McGuinness just adds some really cool legitimacy to the matches.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. Two more over to you questions before we move on. Jordan Henderson wants to ask about what we think is next for Adam Cole. Obviously, at ROH at the weekend, he was kicked out of the Bullet Club. Marty Scurll was put into the Bullet Club.
Bullet Club umbrella. Oh, I love it.
Bullet Club umbrella. Adam Cole, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious he's bound for NXT, right?
Yeah, I think so. I just hope they can... I'm kind of with David J. McCutcheon, in case that wasn't obvious. I think it was him anyway. He said he's a little bit... on Adam Cole, you know, and I'm kind of like, he's good. I'm not really sure he's got much going on, but he's popular, and I think he'll probably do well. And I'm hoping that he's a little bit like, basically, if Adam Cole goes to NXT, you need to do for Adam Cole what they've done for Roderick Strong.
Because yeah, I just watched those vignettes today. Tremendous.
I really like Roderick Strong. I've liked him for a number of years, but I've never sort of claimed. you know, if you ever said to me any point in the last like, 6 or 7 years, who do you want to go over to WWE, I probably wouldn't have said his name, just because I didn't really think of him as being one of those guys. And they've managed to kind of pull something around for him. I think Adam Cole's got a bit more buzz, but...
Yeah, it'll be interesting because the buzz that he's had... Because I saw him wrestle for WCPW a couple of times, and he was great in the ring, and he's...
He's a good wrestler.
But he was very much part of that Bullet Club thing. And, you know, I guess it'll be interesting to see where that all goes. Like, you know, if he goes to WWE, he's not part of the Bullet Club anymore. He's kind of got to shine on his own. So I guess we'll see where that goes. The last question we have, though, from our listeners is from William, that we both, that you are friends with, Robert, and I am friends through you with him, I guess.
William Patterson.
Old Dub Pat 85.
Mm-hmm.
He says he hasn't watched for a while. I think he means WWE. Really jaded, but want to get back into it, I think. What's going to be my biggest obstacle?
Oh.
Which is a very good question.
I think the biggest obstacle to getting back into watching wrestling right now is actually the brand split. Because I think that you have to commit more time than ever. So maybe the biggest obstacle is just deciding which show you're going to watch to start with. Because you can't watch everything. Like you just said, the schedule this week, there's a show Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
I'm lucky because it's kind of my gig now that's, you know, like it's kind of work as well for me. Like, so I can kind of write it off. Mm-hmm. But like if I was you and you've got a full-time teaching job, like I'll be honest, if I was in your position, I would probably still watch Raw and SmackDown. I'd probably still, you know, I mean, Raw would be with a bit of a fast-forward button if you get my drift, but I'd still check it out. But five nights, especially, like, so I'm using you as just a prime example here. You mm-hmm. do a five-day week, right?
Busy person, yeah.
But you've got, like, a really, like, on-it job. You know, you can't call it in and work. You've really got to be on your game. And you're working long hours, and then you finish for the weekend. The prospect of your entire weekend being taken up by new wrestling, and then as mm-hmm. soon as you go back to work, every night you come home, you've got new wrestling. It's a very daunting task, and I feel like you need to be very engaged with it to want to do it. I think my advice would be, the biggest obstacle, I think, is finding the time to commit to it. And I,
yeah.
Kind of what Robert said, I would pick a show, like, just look at who you like. Like, go to the WWE YouTube channel, like, on Wednesday of this week. Watch through the Raw clips, watch through the SmackDown clips, it'll take about 20 minutes all in. Just decide which show you kind of like look of better, and just watch one for a couple of weeks, see if you like it.
Then maybe, yeah, get into that one show, maybe build your resistance up a little bit so that you can take in a different show as well. I think that's actually the biggest obstacle now, is just how much of it there is.
I think a lot of people that I find, the people who are on our fan community that we kind of, you know, scroll through, is like, I think that a lot of people, what they like about the community thing we've got on Facebook is actually there's a place to go and chat to people about wrestling, which is cool.
Yeah.
Because part of the fun of wrestling is actually getting to talk about it and, like, what you like and what you don't like and banter and da-da-da-da. So if you're just kind of watching it and there's...
Banter!
The banter! But if you're just watching it and there's not really anywhere to go and talk or whatever, I don't know if it's as enjoyable as it would be without. So, but keep us in the loop.
No, I don't think so. Like, I've said many times, I don't know if it hadn't been for Twitter, I'm not sure whether I would have been in a position to sort of co-found this podcast with you back in January 2012, because 2011 was rough. And the Summer of Punk thing was, you know, it was good. It did start a fire, but a lot of my sort of sticking around was sort of getting into tweeting live for Monday Night Raw and following other people's thoughts on it, etc. Because it's a TV show that actually does lend itself to that. You know, I don't get people that like live tweet, you know, like a TV show.
Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, or I was thinking of something that broadcast on TV. Like, I didn't watch Line of Duty, but I know a lot of people love that show. I just don't really get people that sit on their phone while they're watching like a drama. But something like WWE, like, it lends itself quite well to that, those kind of instant, you know, making silly jokes or observations and throwing opinions back and forth at each other.
And also part of the fun is like when something happens, seeing what everybody's saying about it. as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kind of having a laugh. So, curious to see. Yeah, so keep us in the loop. Let us know which show you decide and, you know, what your thoughts are on people. It'll be interesting. So, Robert, Hulk Hogan, Big Brother.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
I refer you to numerous reality projects in the past that have not worked out for him.
That's true. This isn't his, though. I just think it depends on the agenda of the program makers, doesn't it? You know, because he could very easily come in a bit like David Hasselhoff, where he's this sort of 80s pop culture icon that's going to come in. He's going to be wearing the bandana. He's going to be cutting around with his ripped t-shirts on. He's going to be calling everybody brother. That's going to become a thing in the mainstream British media while it's on telly, and everyone's going to be doing it, and everyone will make fun of him in a kind of lighthearted way. But they could also angle it like they could ramp up the whole racism thing. They could bring it up. They could put it on the agenda when they introduce him into that program, if he goes on it. So I think, it could go wrong. I mean, let's be honest. Having cameras on him at all times has not worked out so well for him in the recent past.
Mm-hmm.
So he would just have to make sure he doesn't say anything. You know, if he's in there with, I don't know, Shadow from Gladiators or something, he needs to keep himself in check. But I just think that it could be really funny. I'm front loading the comedy value of Hogan being in the show, and the fact that I want to do Big Brother's Little Brother. Maybe not with you though, because you sound a bit despondent.
No, I think I'm just like. Like my mum said to me in the car, it's quite funny. She was like, "Kenneth, you're going to need to come up with an angle because they're all going to be slagging you off." I was like, "You're right, mum. You're right." I think it's just like I would like him to have some semblance of a legacy. And I've seen what Big Brother has done to people in the past who are fragile.
Okay, is he fragile?
Well, I just don't think he's like. I feel like the Hulk Hogan of 1994, like. You can go on YouTube and watch Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage being interviewed by Lily Savage on the bed in Big Breakfast. And he's very in control of who he is. And it's funny. But I feel like right now he's kind of like... Could he be trusted for 3 weeks in a house?
Is Celebrity Big Brother 3 weeks long now?
It's always been that long.
Has it? I thought it was a wee shorty.
It is. The main one's 2 months.
Holy shit. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
I think he's going to do one of those.
Here's the thing.
Remember Vanessa? Remember when Vanessa Felt started drawing chalk on the table?
That's a dated reference and a half, but I do remember it. Yeah,
that's what Hogan's going to do. He's just going to start drawing politicking on the fucking
chalk.
But
you also have to think that there is every chance that this is a resurgence thing for him. You know, if he is like the big baby face of Celebrity Big Brother. Then and people love him, and he becomes a bit of an icon again, and maybe it could kickstart something more positive for him happening. There's 2 weeks to look
be,
at it.
It would be cool. I guess I'm more worried for him and how he would. It's not that I think he's going to go on and be a big mad racist. I just think that I just don't think reality television has ever worked out for him. I don't know why he would ever put himself in this scenario again.
But it's also actual. Sort of reality. Well, it's not really reality at all, but you know what I mean. It's not one of those sort of Hogan Knows Best type shows, but it's all constructed reality. He will be in there. And I mean, yes, I know I'm not being naive. I know there's an element of constructed reality to Big Brother, but it'll be he'll be there on his own. He's not going to be there with his poisonous ex-wife or his
poisonous
awful
son.
Daughter. Yes.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I can say all this stuff, but... If he's on it, I will be glued to it every single night, without question.
Of course you will.
So.
And then we'll do the updates. Celebrity Big Brother. Brother. Update.
You're determined to get that over. Okay, so let's talk about...
It'd be really annoying if he doesn't go in now. But the thing is, they don't reveal until the night, do they?
No. Okay, they've wanted him to go in for a couple of years.
Of course
now,
they do, yeah. If he feels far enough removed from the scandal now that he can maybe make this work.
Hopefully.
Just need to make sure he doesn't say anything controversial.
So, it all started a couple of days ago when Rip Rogers tweeted something out. So I'm going to read it out very quickly. Just this is what Rip Rogers had tweeted because he just got sent it. Every indie match now is this, essentially. Handshake, drawn out move exchange, this is awesome chance, strike exchange, dive, no sell indie strong style, dive, no more strike, or sorry, more strikes, no sells, dive, flippy floppy sequence, dive, hit everyone with each other's finishers, then Humpty Dumpty we all fall down, fight forever chant, rinse and repeat until every move is useless and means nothing, dive, take unsafe shot that looks like shit and hurts like hell, then roll up finish, handshake and hug after the match, everyone's hand raised, all these guys chant, go home and type on social media thanking your opponents and the company for the match and telling others they should go book these guys. Dive. So that came out and I think it sparked a lot of discussion. Mm-hmm. And my issue more with it is I'm not completely in one camp or the other. I'm more towards one side. But my issue is more that you're not really allowed to have an opinion, it seems, for the most part. Like, even in our Facebook community, which is like pretty good barometer of people talking about wrestling in an intelligent way. But a lot of people want to brand you as one of two things. You either are stuck in the past and you need to get over it, or you're branded as it being bad that you like indie wrestling and you should be ashamed of it. It's like those are the two opinions that people seem to think you can have. You can't be in the middle, you can't have bits of both. So that was the initial
thing. No, of course you can.
And that conversation never even really got a chance to get started because it escalated. So then Bubba Ray Dudley tweets out a photo of him doing a dive onto some Ring of Honor talent. I think it's Warm. Who are the three guys?
I can't remember who's in the photo.
And I'm looking at the photo and I don't know. It's the Briscoe. Well, the Briscoe.
That says everything you need to know, folks, about which side of the argument Kenny lands on. I don't know, a bunch of vanilla midgets.
But like I was saying, like I am not a huge fan of indie wrestling for the most part. Like I think I think David had said this, and I'm kind of saying like I hate the whole let's handshake and hug after every single match and like you know thank each other on Twitter. I hate it. Drives me fucking nuts. But at the same time, there are storylines in indie wrestling. You can't pigeonhole it that that's all of indie wrestling. It's not.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the problem, is people are so determined to categorise things that they don't like realise that there's room for subtlety.
Yeah, and like my thing is, like, to be honest, I've watched a fair amount of like El Generico and Kevin Steen stuff, and I prefer watching them in WWE because I feel like they do things that mean more.
Get over it, old man.
I know, right? Old man yells at cloud. But, like that, so that's just kind of, that's my preference. Doesn't mean I'm right or I'm wrong, it just means it's my preference. So after that, Bubba Ray Dudley tweets out this photo of him doing a dive, and then Randy Orton retweets it and says, lol, there is a difference between a young, hungry talent diving and an old, out-of-shape vet falling. To which Bubba Ray responded, hey Randy, this tweet wasn't aimed at you, still think you're awesome, and then put falling over House of Horrors, which is quite funny. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Good for Bubba. Then Randy tweets out a gif of a man on like a deck chair about to do a dive into a paddling pool and he can't execute it. And then Randy Orton was pretty funny because somebody just wrote about the gif. He flopped just like your championship reign, and Randy Orton said, be more precise, there's 13 of them. Which did make me laugh. And then here comes Randy Orton. He says, I really need to issue an apology. And I'm going to read his apology and then I'm going to throw it over to Robert Duffin, who's going to tell you exactly what he thinks. Here we go. This is Randy Orton on this whole subject. Sorry to the indie marks, indie guys and old timers who do dives took offence. Just having a good time over a few drinks in Denmark closing the SmackDown Live tour, while beating Raw and making over $5 million in the last 11 shows. Now, I know to some that doesn't equate to a standing room only crowd of 150 people paying $8 at an armory somewhere, but in the big boy world, that's called putting asses in seats. So enjoy your flips, dives, and 20 super kicks per match. To each their own. I will go dive back into my 13th title run and get ready to flip when my bank statement comes this month. Headlock. Robert? Any thoughts on Randy Orton?
This is really tricky, okay, because I really don't like him.
How is that tricky?
I kind of, because I am aware enough as a person when I lose objectivity over something, and this is something that I'm losing objectivity over, because I just plain don't like the guy, and I think he's always kind of rubbed me up the wrong way. So I am perfectly...
Wait a minute. Before you go on, why don't you like him?
Well, I'm sort of going to get into that.
Okay. All right.
Okay, I'm going to get into it. You know, I mean, I know it's not the most insightful criticism of all time, but it really just comes down to the fact that I think he's incredibly boring. Like, just so boring. And when JBL says, if you were going to build a sports entertainment superstar up from scratch, you'd build Randy Orton. And I'm like, mate, I had Create a Wrestler and all those video games back in the day, and I never once made fucking Randy Orton. I had that weird WCW one where you could make a guy with a shark head. I did that, but I didn't make anything that looked anything like Randy Orton. So I just I've never really got him. And I appreciate that people liked him back when he was in the Legend Killer thing, and I've seen a lot of that, and yes, he was arguably better then, but, you know, that was over 10 years ago. So I don't know how much you can not call a guy out on being boring and lazy and uninventive, given that 15 years he's been around. But anyway, so I'm willing to go with the idea that this could just be, I think he's just putting this stuff out to just get a rise out of people, okay? He's just trying to get a rise, he's trying to annoy people and piss them off, and he's going to annoy the fans of indie wrestling, because everybody knows that, you know, wrestling fans are very touchy. Not in, well, also in that way, but
both ways, we
can be a little bit touchy about, you know, because we're always, I feel like from, and given some of the chat on the Facebook community, we've been on the back foot with our fandom for most of our lives, you know, in most situations you walk into, you're already working out how you're going to defend the fact that you're into this before you mention that you are. So I get why wrestling fans are touchy. The only thing, the only people more touchy than wrestling fans is wrestlers who are, you know, so sensitive in their egos, I find. Not all of them, but a lot of them. That they can't really take criticism or a joke. Sometimes they get really huffy about things. So I'm fully aware that I should just be like, you know what? Randy Orton is not for me. And he said this stuff, and I don't even disagree with all of it. Like the thing that Rip Rogers put out, I was like, yeah, it's pretty accurate, actually. And to give it a bit of colour, a couple of weeks ago, I found a couple of Ring of Honor DVDs that I bought back in 2010, because I was at the shows. It was the two shows they did in Phoenix the weekend of WrestleMania 26. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I was just like, oh man, that Friday night show was so good. Like, I had Kenny Omega versus Kevin Steen. That was like the best match. So good, and the main event was the American Wolves versus the Briscoes. Oh, it was so good. You know what? I'm going to watch this. I will watch this show. Oh God, I was so bored. Like I was just like, oh no. Like the opening match was a stinker. It's like a 6-man tag thing. It was shite. The Kenny Omega Kevin Steen match was not as good as I remember it being, and I got bored halfway through the Wolves and the Briscoes, because I was like, oh, someone win. Like, someone just win. Somebody pinfall B3. Just please. No more near falls. No more brain busters into super kicks. So I'm not the same wrestling fan I was 7 years ago. And I'm not saying that I was wrong to enjoy it then, because I did see it live and I'd never really watched the DVDs. I just bought them. So I'm not you. I'm not kind of on the same sort of level as you, where I'm active. Not that you're actively against it. That's not what I mean. But, you know, you're kind of like, it's not for me and I don't like it, because sometimes it is for me and I do like it. But I've also realised that I really need some stakes for a match. Like, when I'm going back and just watching two guys wrestle, I'm like, oh yeah, this is really fun to see in the flesh on the night. But looking back at it now with no story, not really worth the rewatch. So I'm not disagreeing with what Rip Rogers said, but Randy Orton's just a fucking cunt, isn't he? Like, I just don't like him. And the thing is, I don't buy into the fact that some of it is a joke, right? But I think he means some of that. And he's like, oh, we made $6 million on SmackDown. Mate, it wasn't you. I went to the Glasgow show, didn't see Randy Orton t-shirts in the merch stand. I saw a lot of Roman Reigns t-shirts, and I prefer Roman Reigns to Randy Orton. I saw a lot of John Cena t-shirts. I prefer John Cena to Randy Orton. Neither of those guys were there. I saw lots of people walking around with their merch on. I didn't see any of your shitey, sneaky t-shirts. So I don't really think that was the... I mean, AJ Styles and was probably the main selling point for the SmackDown tour. AJ Styles, Nakamura, and SmackDown itself, let's be honest, the brand sells itself now. Nobody's going to see Randy stinking Orton. And, well, they weren't. I refuse to accept it.
But what I think's funny about Randy Orton is that, like, Randy Orton has this, like, base level of talent, right, that he can get away with just being this base level. Like, he doesn't really need to do any more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the odd time when he does...
He's talked about on it.
Yeah. And
he's a big huffy bastard as well. I didn't get a good WrestleMania entrance. My WrestleMania entrance looked like a big sperm.
It's because you're fucking... the band that sang your song are fucking Rev Theory.
At least you got on the show, Randy. Like, there was guys having better matches than you and Bray Wyatt did on the pre-show. So, not the Battle Royal, obviously. But... he gives nothing. And I don't really get... I'm sure, I know there's going to be loads of people listening to this, and they're just going to be like, I really like Randy Orton. Brilliant. Okay, great. I'm glad you do. Okay, because somebody has to enjoy him. But I'm going to say some stuff, right? And people are not going to like it. And if there is no journalistic objectivity to it, it's nothing that we stand for, but I don't really care. I'm just going to go into it, okay? First of all, it's all very well and good, right, for Randy Orton to sit in his ivory tower made of $6 million that he made, you know, with the shitty matches that he's had for the last God knows how many years, looking down on people who are wrestling for $8 tickets in an armory when you spent the grand total of 4 weeks in your dad's pal's independent promotion before you got picked up by Ohio Valley Wrestling, effectively WWE, 4 weeks, a month into your career because your second name is Orton, and all these shitty matches he's shoveled into my mouth over the 12 years. He's using his bastard and silver spoon to do it. So that annoys me because he was handed everything on a plate. I won't get into the whole army thing. I know he was like he's a deserter or whatever. And that's, you know, whatever it was. But he's just done so many things that annoy me. He's been there for so long. He's not really advanced the character. He's still the same boring guy for at least the last 7 or 8 years. He's not really done much. He had that exploding brain disease, the IED, for a while. Obviously, that got better. he stinks up main events all the time. And then there's the stuff that he says IRL, okay? The stuff that he comes out with in real life. So I'm a big sort of proponent. You know, people say to me, oh, you know, Robert, how can you still, like, watching Woody Allen movies? Like, didn't he diddle his kids? And I'll be like, he may have, okay? But Purple Rose of Cairo is still a good movie. Like, Robert, how can you be having a jaunty jig to Billie Jean? Michael Jackson's one of the most morally dubious singers of all time. And I'll be like, yeah, but Billie Jean's like a really good song. And I'm okay with that. But, so basically, I can separate the art from the artist. Except when it comes to Randy Orton. Because the art's not good enough. Okay, he's not good enough. So, first of all, did you ever hear him on Booker T's podcast?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Booker T asked him about slavery. And Randy Orton said, as a white man, that's a very tricky topic to discuss. Do you know who it's trickier for? Black men. Honestly, he's so privileged in every aspect of his life, okay, that it seeps through into everything. He's just,
why
he's
did Booker T ask him about slavery?
I can't remember. They were talking about politics, right? But
oh,
anyway.
God, great. Two rich guys talking about politics. Sounds
but
good.
I know. I mean, you'd much rather have two poor, scruffy Scottish people talking about it. But, and I was just kind of like, oh my God, like, listen to yourself. And I know I'm becoming one of those people, but I don't really. And some people are going to hate this, but I can't help it. I can't divorce my, and this is just me. This is all my own idiosyncratic hatred for him. I'm not putting this forward as an argument for why you shouldn't like him. But clearly he's okay with slavery. No, I'm joking, he's not. But as a white man, that's difficult for me to talk about. Oh, poor you. Yeah. Slavery, that was really hard on white people. Like, when they had to give them all up. Rough. Anyway. And then... he's an All Lives Matter guy. He put out some tweets last year, and it was during when that all that stuff was happening in America. And he was like, somebody said to him, like, Randy, what about, like, you know, black people that are being killed in their communities? And he was like, hey, man, it doesn't matter what color your skin is. You know, all lives matter. And I was like, ugh. Just groaned. He's like, ugh. Like, shut up, Randy. And then, as I mentioned, to noise up Adam Ferguson, because I knew it would annoy him, Orton is, you know, he voted for Donald Trump. Now, a lot of people voted for Donald Trump, obviously. He won the fucking thing. Vince McMahon voted for Donald Trump. Doesn't really bother me. You know, I got, of course he would. He hosted WrestleMania. AJ Styles voted for Donald Trump. AJ Styles is a flat earther. Everything about AJ Styles on paper, I should loathe. He's like a science denier, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, ugh, but he's such a good wrestler. He's like Billie Jean. Okay? So I'm
Wait a minute. Yeah, okay. Never mind.
So I'm fine with it. I know you're going to call me out because, yeah, I've no objectivity here. I just don't like Randy Orton.
Well, no, I was just going to say, the comparison of Michael Jackson and what he did to AJ Styles being a flat earther is a little bit far, but I take your point.
Okay, I'm not comparing those two things. I'm just saying that in some cases, the art is so good, I'm willing to overlook some of the things that they did in their or may not have done in their personal life because, you know, they've never convicted. And now Randy Orton, total scumbag. And so basically, he said all this stuff, and I don't really care about anything that he said. This has just unleashed all of this sort of festering, pustule hatred that I have for the guy, and how I think he's a privileged asshole who has half-assed his way through, I don't know, like 70% of his career in the WWE. He's been handed so many opportunities, and he fucks them up and blames other people for them. Your WrestleMania match wasn't shit because you rode a sperm to the ring, mate. It's because you clearly walked in there and given nothing to the guy whose biggest match it really was. And he just couldn't be bothered with it because Triple H did an interview the week of WrestleMania and said that you were lazy, basically, in not so many words. So he's got his own problems and he's shite. But what I want to put forward as an argument that I don't think you're going to like, I want you to hear me out.
Okay. Can I say one thing very quickly about Orton?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't have as strong opinions as you, but I think that what I always...
There is no objectivity here, I just don't like him.
No, that's fine. My issue with Randy Orton, more than anything else, is that I think he could be great. That's my issue.
Can't be bothered.
But he can't be bothered. Like, you know, when Seth Rollins was on the Chris Jericho podcast about a year ago, and he said, you know, I had to, like, convince Randy to do that spot, you know, the leap up for the curb stuff into the RKO.
That's what happens when you're so privileged, you never had to work for it. Like all the guys did who are going to make him look good in the twilight of his career.
And then you look at a guy like, you know, say what you like about him, right? And there is arguments that you can make of things that he's done or whatever, right? But you've got a guy like John Cena, right? Mm-hmm. John Cena could have been a fucking arsehole if he wanted to be. He really could have. Like, if you look at... When we look back at John Cena, like... Look at the Summer of Punk. Who was the guy that Punk got to beat twice? It wasn't Triple H. It was John Cena. John Cena's the guy that did put Punk over. John Cena's the guy that would go on to eventually put over guys like Kevin Owens and AJ Styles and stuff like that. He would work with younger guys all the time and he really seemed to make an effort, you know? Did the US Open Challenge and really sort of put guys, you know, into big match situations. And I feel like it's just such a shame that, like, if Orton did half of that, I feel we'd be having different conversations. But now we've got to a point where we've got this Jinder Mahal thing, which is separate conversation, but like, Jinder Mahal is dying on a fucking fire, and the guy that he's got to look to prop him up is Randy Orton, who's basically just sitting in a sun lounger being like, I'm not trying.
You know, there's so many lesser podcasts and outlets who, and everyone's done this, right? Everyone's done this as an article, as a podcast. Why are John Cena and Randy Orton not actually on the same level? Like, what could it be? And it's not a mystery. John Cena works for it. That's it. That's why he's seen as a bigger deal, because he actually works for it. And yes, some people might not like his character, totally justified. Some people might not like some of the booking decisions he was involved in, the Nexus, or who he didn't put over, or whatever your argument's for. Totally valid. But you can't say that Cena's not a grafter. And Orton's is not a grafter, which is why I want to get into... I want to bring up Jinder Mahal. And why, Kenneth, I think that it is our responsibility as a progressive pocket of wrestling fandom to throw our 100% support behind Jinder Mahal on Sunday. And let me tell you why, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to tell you why. So, number one, does Jinder Mahal winning the title make any sense from a booking point of view? No. Okay, it doesn't, okay? Why would you want him to win, right? He came out of nowhere, no pun intended, and became the number one contender. And everybody hated it because he was like this loser guy. He wasn't really back that long. He hadn't done anything. And suddenly he's the number one contender, right? So everybody hated it. I get it. Nobody wants him to win for that reason. Absolutely. Two, should we want him to win just because it's like a progressive thing? Because, you know, he is of an ethnic background. There's never been a WWE champion with his heritage ever before. Like, should that be enough of a reason for us to want him to win? No, it shouldn't be. Because I don't think tokenism is a good thing. Tokenism is not a good thing. I don't think they should, just because they want to expand into India, doesn't mean they should put the title on a Canadian guy who does like a Maharaja gimmick. So no, I don't think it should be for that. Three, should he get the title because he's actually really good? No evidence of that. Okay,
zero.
There's no evidence. There's zero evidence that he's any good. Okay, he's never had a great match really. He's doing a very kind of outdated gimmick. It sucks for WWE that this is all they can ever do with people of a certain background. You know, I was reading an article on The Atlantic from a couple of years ago today that was saying, you know, it was about WWE's race problem. They were like, why are all black men in WWE like rappers with grills? You know, why do all people of sort of vaguely Middle Eastern or Indian heritage have to be like Bollywood stars or wear turbans, etc., etc.? So it's not great for the booking, okay, for him to win. It's not great in terms of him being a great wrestler. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not really great for progression because it's very tokenistic. But here's why I think he should win, okay? Number one, we're not sacrificing the world's greatest WWE title reign. We're not, okay? It's Randy Orton. He's shite. We've established that. He's just holding that title until he can find something better to do with it, right? And Jinder Mahal is not something better to do with it. Don't get me wrong. I don't want Jinder to win because I think it's going to be good. I want Jinder to win for this reason. Now, we are in a bubble, Kenneth. Me and you, Sondra and David, all the good people have inside the ropes. We are in a progressive bubble. Now, I'm not saying that everybody that listens to the show are liberal lefties like us. I don't think that's true. And that's fine. There's people, we would have lots of different opinions on things. However, we are all nice people, which you can be, regardless of where on the political spectrum you are. Everybody can be nice to each other, which is mm-hmm. what we put in the Facebook group. We're all really nice people. And I think that ultimately, everybody in our Facebook group, and me, and you, and David and Sandra, would agree that racism is wrong. It's rubbish, right? Racism is rubbish. It's a horrible cancer. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And I'm getting to a point.
Yeah.
Now, wrestling has a race problem, both in its booking, but also in its fandom. You know, you've been in the belly of the beast. You've been to wrestling in North America. You know what the demographics are like. You know that some of those USA chants don't just come because of Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the memories of that. Some of them come because some of the people that watch wrestling are actually pure racist, right? They're like horrible bastards. But the total scum demographics, okay? I'm being very Hollywood elite here. I apologise. So, I want Jinder Mahal to win on Sunday because I think there will be lots of Randy Orton fans who may or may not have voted for whoever, who will actually be angry about it. And they won't be angry because it's bad for the booking. They won't be angry because Jinder Mahal's not a good wrestler. And they won't be angry because Randy Orton's title win. There are going to be some people really angry if he wins on Sunday because of the colour of his skin. And I would like him to win to really fucking annoy them, because Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal is a no-win situation, really, for us. Because I don't really like Randy. You're kind of lukewarm by the sounds of it. Nobody really likes Jinder. So what pleasure can we get from it? We can't get anything from it as a wrestling match, as a piece of booking, as something to look forward to for the summer. We're not looking forward to the summer of Mahal. But if all that can come from it is just sitting there in the knowledge that somewhere in the world there's a really angry white man who's raging and might even be so angry he has a heart attack and dies because someone of an ethnic background won the WWE title from Randy Orton, then I can be okay with Jinder Mahal winning. And for that reason and that reason only.
That's a lot to unpack.
I was just thinking about it today. I was
okay, okay. Here's the issue, right? I've been getting a lot of shit for what I've said about Jinder Mahal, right? And I actually think it makes me the least racist person that I'm able to see through whatever...
Oh, you don't dislike him for racist reasons.
Oh, I couldn't give a fuck what colour he is. He's shite.
Yeah, he's
he could be fucking purple and he's still gash.
He's rubbish.
I've been thinking about it, and I think that I need to take my opinions and put them on the line. Because I need to put my money where my mouth is.
Right.
So I've got an idea.
Okay.
I'm going to bet, and I'm going to put my money behind Randy Orton because it's the right decision for wrestling. He should beat Jinder Mahal because Jinder Mahal should never have that title. But if by some miracle that fucking guy, that veiny Bane lookalike, wins, I will transform myself for 1 month and I'll make it the month of the Maharaja. Which means that for one calendar month, so like there's three other podcasters on Inside the Ropes, there's Robert, there's Sandra, there's David. For each week of that month, they can pick one punishment that I need to get for Jinder Mahal winning the championship. So whether it's me having to be nice about him, whatever it is, I will do it. Because I'm that confident that this travesty of justice is not going to happen. There is no way that they're going to put the belt that once was held by Bruno fucking Sammartino is going to go on to one of the most pointless, one of the most... You think Randy Orton's boring? Jinder fucking Mahal. The only thing that's not boring about him is the fact that he can't speak Punjab and he pretends about it.
He's got a turban.
Well,
I think he should get light up turban.
Cute ethnic diversity growing throughout the world.
No, like in all seriousness.
Jinder Mahal is gash. But the thing is...
he's rubbish. I'm not saying he's
the
good.
The worst thing is, to your point, is the only time over the last 10 years where Randy Orton's ever been any good is when somebody pushes him to be good. When somebody like Bray Wyatt as a character pushes him. When somebody like Christian pushes him.
You know when Christian's pushing you. But no, I was thinking today, because obviously I had all my irrational Randy Orton anger, which I don't present as... with any integrity. I just don't like the guy. I apologise for it, but I just don't like him. And I was just thinking all day going, oh God, like there is no... I was grasping at straws. I said, there has to be some way that I can support Jinder on Sunday. There's got to be some way, because I don't like him, Jinder. I don't think he should win. No, you're right. He absolutely should not win. But I was trying to find some angle where on Sunday night I can be like, let's go, Jinder. And the only one I could come up with is that there will be some racist people that won't like it. And if they don't like it, like if Nigel Farage is watching Backlash and he's like, God damn it! I'll be like, okay, I can take it. But as long as he loses immediately. He needs to lose the title on Tuesday. But he's not going to win, though. You're worried, aren't you? You're worried that he might win.
A little bit.
I don't think he'll win.
I feel like I'm going to do you and Kelly beat Beth Phoenix. So that was my reaction.
But
utter rage.
I kind of the only thing is there's an awful lot of, you know, going on just to have him completely lose. Like maybe it'll be like a DQ and we'll get another month of this. I don't know. But I don't think he'll win.
But my favorite tweet, I had to find
some angle that would allow me to support him, and that's the best I can do.
My favourite tweet, though, was a tweet that was given to you. And it was from Aiden Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
And he sums it up by saying, I love that Orton's taking credit for the success of SmackDown. He's currently in a mid-card world title feud with Jinder Mahal.
No, he's an idiot. Like, Orton's an idiot. If you like him, brilliant. Like, I'm genuinely, you know, if you're a fan of his, cool. I'm glad you like him, because everybody should like what they like. But... I can't explain it. He's like the one guy who, even if he had a 6-star match in the Tokyo Dome, brother, I'd still be like, that was shite. I just don't like him.
You really hate him, don't you?
I really hate him. I hate him so much.
Okay, well, Robert, we went on a long time. We talked about different things. I think for the last portion of the podcast, it's only fair that, you know, the script.
Oh, just to let people know, obviously on Sunday, I'll be hosting a very very important protest in George Square in Glasgow in support of gender. It will be the attendance. It will be high. There could be as many as one other person there. So please get there early, folks, for the George Square gender protest.
Limited spaces available.
Limited, very limited spaces available.
George Square only fits a couple of thousand, so you never know.
There's a Greggs just across the road. We can go over there and get one of the curry bakes.
Oh my god. A curry bake, you fucking...
They're disgusting, aren't they? They're actually disgusting. Do you remember? We didn't even mention this on the podcast.
He couldn't have a curry bake, though. It's not halal.
You know they are.
Isn't halal just... Never mind, I'm not doing it. Never mind, go on. Move on.
Remember when we were at the SmackDown show, and I said to you that, because obviously Vince McMahon's not racist, okay? I don't think he's racist, but he has very kind of dialed back racial politics.
Yes,
you know, like everything, stuff that was happening in the 90s felt like it was coming from the 50s. And gender feels a little bit dubious. You know, he's a bad guy. Why is this guy bad? Because he's Indian? Like that's, and then I said to you, like, can you imagine what would the worst thing that they could possibly book for him to do? And that they would bring back the old, you know, that the Japanese wrestlers used to throw salt in people's eyes? And like, and then Vince McMahon is backstage just like, gender. We're going to do the famous curry powder to the eye spot, brother. That's what we're going to do. And I was just like, I just sitting thinking this to myself, going, oh my god, like, you could see it. You could actually see it.
Like, I want to ask some of our, because we have, it baffles me that people from across the world listen to this. Baffles me. We have listeners in India, mental.
Yeah, but who said that they don't like him?
No. But no, yeah, they all hate him. They all hate him, right?
Everybody hates him.
Every single, like, Raul and, shouts, Karan, who's originally from India, Prangal, there's various people from India that listen to this podcast who have said, don't blame us, we don't like him either. Right? Like, they don't want to take ownership of him. He's like fucking Tom Hanks in The Terminal when Krakoja's closed. And he's stuck in the airport, he can't go to the other country. Right? Cue Jinder Mahal in an airport trying to put trolleys in the thing to get a doll to go get a Burger King. That's what's happening.
That, you know what, like, Scotland has the kind of cultural cringe where if we were watching something produced by another country and, you know, Scottish people are, you know, they've got ginger beards and they wear kilts and we're kind of like, oh god. Like, what, I mean, is that what it's like for, like, the Indian people that are listening to the show that watch WWE, like, do they see gender and they're like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, why can't he just be a guy that's, like, an Indian guy? Like, why does he have to be doing the Maharaja thing? Like, you know, your textbook 80s ethnic bad guy, tick, 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 all the things. So strange. I don't get it. But
I do want to ask.
If those Singh brothers turn up with curry powder to the eyes,
but I do want to ask.
Taken out the back and shot.
I do want to ask anybody who's listening to this podcast who speaks Punjab, right? I want to ask you because I have a theory that I don't think that Jinder Mahal speaks Punjab. I think he just comes out and goes blah 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 blah. And he's
getting on some thin ice in the last 10 minutes of the show.
He's learned like 3 Punjab words that he like puts in there. Like I don't believe he's speaking it because he looks so unsure of what he's saying every time. Anyway. So, from that.
Yes. But my point, my sort of protracted thing is that, look, this is my advice for people on Sunday, okay? Let's just be happy that there are other good matches happening on that show. Styles and Owens and Nakamura and Ziggler, like, they'll be really good.
Orton and Jinder, should be fun.
Yes. Orton and Jinder, it's a shitty situation, okay?
I love that it's in Chicago, though. Fucking love it.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Because Saunders going to the show, and I was like, if anyone thinks for a fucking country second that during that match there's not going to be CM Punk chants, you're off your fucking nuts. Because if I was there, I'd be chanting CM Punk, because I'd rather see him than these two.
I would probably do it, and not because I agree with those chants, because I think sometimes they're a bit disrespectful, because I know that Randy Orton can sometimes get very huffy-puffy in the ring if things are not going his way, because that's how he is. He's so pampered that if anything goes his way, he goes in a big huff-puff. So, absolutely, pelt him with them. And then as the unthinkable happens, ladies and gentlemen, as the unthinkable happens, and Jinder Mahal holds aloft Bruno fucking San Martino's WWE title belt, they at least know that there is one good thing that we can take away from it, and that there are some horrible, nasty people in the world who will be really angry for, like, ages because they don't like him. And at least, if nothing else, we can be happy that some racists will feel awful, because they deserve to feel awful. So there we go. I found it. I found the one thing that we can take from Jinder's inevitable victory.
There you go. Well, the last brief 10 minutes of the podcast, we want to just talk about the proposed script.
Oh, fuck yeah, I forgot about this.
For the movie on the life of Vince McMahon. And basically, we have got some snippets of the script, and we're going to read some of it out to you. We're going to play the characters in some of these.
Okay.
So the idea is that this script was so bad that Vince McMahon has bought it, so it will never get made. That is what's happened, right? Vince McMahon and the WWE have bought it. Linda McMahon was asked in a media interview the other day when it's going to come out, and she very clearly was kind of like, I don't think that movie's going to get made. And once you read some of the script, you can understand why. But I would love for this movie to get made, because it's essentially No Holds Barred 2. That's what it is.
If we could get a copy of the whole script, like we could do a live reading of it.
I'm working on it, trust me.
That would be so good.
Okay, I'm going to read the opening scene for you, folks. This is on
Which
the
one is that?
It says opening scene.
Got you.
There you go.
So there's no part for me here.
No, you just need to enjoy. So basically, the film takes you through from the 60s all the way through to the current, but the time frames are like, all like Vince Senior dies during the steroid trial, not in like 82. But anyway, we're just gonna read some of the snippets of what happened. So up first is the opening scene, just to give you the scene of the movie at the beginning. Slap! A massive hand buries into rolls of flesh. Pull back to see two giant men panting and sweating as they wrestle in National Arena, Washington, D.C., 1969. One is a 400-pound behemoth, Gorilla Monsoon, late 30s, body hair where most athletes have muscles. The other is Lou Albano, 40s, also not someone you necessarily ever wanted to see in a singlet. Half the seats are empty, cigarette smoke filling the gaps between a mostly male and entirely bored audience.
So not much has changed.
Now, I want you, Robert, to read for me the voiceover of Gorilla Monsoon in the Monsoon on Snooker, please.
Let me just find Monsoon on Snooker. Okay.
Okay, so this is how we're introduced to Jimmy Snooker. Exterior of the house during the day. A camera crew films a female porn star sunbathing in the nude by a pool. We pan up a telephone pole to find a well-cut Polynesian man fixing the line, watching her. Cue to Gorilla Monsoon voiceover.
James William Reher, age 35, born in Fiji but moved to Tarzana to work as an adult film star. He's known for his acrobatic entrances.
Just as he's about to pounce, that's the scene!
Yep.
Then at night, the spotlight swings to Superfly, perched atop the turnbuckle. So, let's just grasp that Jimmy Snooker, in this thing, is an adult film star who is at the top of a telephone pole pretending to fix the line to perv on a female porn star before he pounces on her. Pretty problematic given that he was a murderer.
Or entirely accurate.
So that's how they introduced Jimmy Snooker. But let's go on. We're now going to have Gorilla Monsoon voicing over, describing Roddy Piper.
Here we go.
So, it's in a jail cell at night. A young man with sandy blonde hair and a cherub face, 20s, bounces off the walls like a caged animal. Cue Gorilla.
Roderick Toombs, born in Canada, but currently homeless. When he's not incarcerated. Petty crime, mostly pickpocketing, drunk in public and fighting. Lots and lots of fighting. Actually threw a guy out of a moving city bus. Turns out it was a goddamn bus driver. Oh, Jesus.
I'm going to get you, just to read this next one, because the dialogue is not really that important, but can you please read the one that I've titled for you, McMahon, Albano, and a Monkey?
Okay. McMahon. Wow. $20,000? Iron Sheik. Plus some pistachios. Lou Albano leads a monkey into the ring on a leash, then coaxes it to urinate in the opposing corner. Another great scene. Shall we do the next one that you've called Jesse Ventura's Makeup is Stolen?
Yep. I'll let you play Jesse Ventura here. I mean, it's one line. Yeah.
I'll nail it, though.
Okay. Internal arena shot, locker room at night. Wrestlers are lined up to dutifully take a needle in the ass from Dr. Zahorian. An acne-plagued Jesse the Body Ventura opens a container of makeup, furious to find it empty.
You use all my cover-up, Roberts!
He tears after Jake the Snake Roberts, slamming him into the lockers. As other wrestlers come over to break it up, it turns into a full-on brawl over makeup. Gorilla Monsoon enters, doesn't like what he sees, quickly backs out.
Just like everybody else watching this fucking movie.
Right, so let's go next to... wait a minute, I'm trying to do an order here. Okay, Gorilla and Linda. This is the best. I will be Gorilla Monsoon, and okay. Robert can be Linda McMahon. Now, this is how they have scripted Linda McMahon to speak. Right? I shit you not. So I think... the situation is that Bob Backlund...
I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get through this. I'm going to do my best, folks. This is going to be my proudest moment.
Bob Backlund.
Me in the role of Linda.
And me as Gorilla Monsoon. So Bob Backlund and Hulk Hogan are around. So I guess it's like Vince is trying to decide who to go with. We cut to Gorilla and Linda. Gorilla Monsoon. If you two had a nickel for every person you've promised riches to, we'd all be fucking rich.
Look, Backlund's a nice guy, all right? He's like the guy a girl might lose her virginity to. But Hogan, he's the guy that makes a girl think, yeah, okay, let's try some butt stuff. And that opens us up to a whole new audience.
Linda McMahon is scripted in this movie to say, Hogan is the kind of guy that makes a girl think, yeah, okay, let's try some butt stuff. What the fuck?
Backlund's a nice guy.
So here is Hogan and Vince come up with NHB. Would you like to... You can be Vince. Okay.
Okay.
Interior of a gym during the day. Hogan rips through some sets, chiseled body glistening with sweat. McMahon spots him, sort of, as he does a bump of blow from a tiny vial. They're both jacked.
They're both jacked.
Cut to McMahon.
Who am I? I'm McMahon. Sorry, folks. You know what we should do, Hulk? Make a movie, an actioner, like Stallone or Schwarzenegger, dude.
Count me in, brother.
You'll play the most popular wrestler in the world, but there's a billionaire media mogul trying to lead you astray from the righteous path. I'll fucking finance this shit myself.
Hogan slaps hands with McMahon, tag, and they switch places. And we cut next to Hogan and the brunette. Robert will play the brunette.
Okay.
Grainy VHS footage as Hogan sets up a home video camera in a hotel room somewhere.
I wouldn't like him.
A beautiful brunette waits for him on the bed, eagerly unties Hogan's robe, only to be disappointed.
That junk swells you up everywhere but where it counts.
As Hogan rushes to turn off the camera, we see that his balls have shrunk from the roids, so that it looks like he has two marbles and a golf pencil between his legs.
Talk about false advertising, man.
Oh, That's genuinely the best script I've ever seen in my life. And just finally, Hogan and Vince talking about Ted Turner. You can be Vince.
Okay.
So it starts with Hogan. I'm the last one who can bring you down. Tell your lawyer to go easy on me. I'll throw it all in the dock.
Tell Ted Turner to enjoy my sloppy seconds.
Hogan gets up to leave, but McMahon calls after him.
Terry, how big is it?
How big is what?
Turner's yacht. Is it bigger than mine?
Hogan just shakes his head and walks out.
Please find this whole script. We'll record it together, or we'll do a live performance of it or something.
I mean, it legitimately has No Holds Barred too. It absolutely is.
It sounds better than No Holds Barred.
I mean, that just that's
and that's
like,
a high watermark for me.
I mean, it's just exceptional, isn't it? Absolutely,
it's
exceptional.
So good. Can I do the Linda line one more time?
Sure. Okay, hold on. So we're gonna recreate one more time for you. Gorilla Monsoon and Linda McMahon discussing whether they should go with Backlund or Hogan. Gorilla kicks off. If you two had a nickel for every person you've promised riches to, we'd all be fucking rich.
Look, Backlund's a nice guy, all right? He's like the guy a girl might lose her virginity to. But Hogan, he's the guy that makes a girl think, yeah, okay, let's try some butt stuff. And that opens us up to a whole new audience.
This is the woman that currently works for the president in the small business department.
And to be honest, I think this is probably the kind of conversations they have.
Oh, it's literally one of my favourite things. Well, I guess we should wrap up there. We can't really top the Vince pandemonium script. Robert, any final things you want to say about anything?
No, thank you for listening. Thanks everybody for chit-chatting in the Facebook community. It's been really cool, actually. I mean, the notifications are killing my phone battery, but it's okay. But there's so many things.
Every day I log in, it's like 20 notifications. I'm like, is any of these actually for me? Or is it just...
I know, just generic chat. But no, it's really good. I like the community, so well done. Well done, everybody, for keeping it a positive force in the world of wrestling. There's racists out there. Don't let them in your house. Or your Facebook group. And I hope everybody enjoys Backlash on Sunday, including the ultimate crowning of the People's Maharaja Jinder Mahal.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And I'll see you at the protest on Sunday. If you're coming along, let me know. I'm expecting huge numbers. Probably the biggest crowd since the inauguration. And yeah, enjoy the wrestling this week, everybody.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
I love you all. You can find me on Twitter at Bertie_ITR. That's at BERTIE_ITR.
You can find me at KennyMC1985. Thank you so much for all your support. Please do join us on Patreon. patreon.com/insidetheropes for more bonus content. David and I did one on fan fiction yesterday, one on ECW One Night Stand. Robert and I did one recently on SummerSlam 2002, which diverged into other stuff, but it was good.
Mm-hmm. It does, as we have proven this evening, we are prone to do.
We are, but we'll be back soon to talk about other stuff.
Oh, I just got a text. Oh, okay, it says, hey bro, can you delay the protest on Sunday? Have to go to church. Let me scroll up here. I have to go to church because I'm a mark for Jesus. Love Vince. Okay, so the protest will be getting it'll be beginning at midday now, folks, for all the Jesus marks on Sunday. Don't say I'm not diverse.
Bye, everybody.
I wonder if any of this show will get on to castrating the marks.
It would be my dream for your Randy Orton rant to go on there.
But I just don't like him. It's not a wrestling opinion. I just think he's a shithead.
Oh yeah, because Vince Russo sits and listens to the whole thing to get some context before he makes.
Oh, I will. If he puts me on there, I will hound that fuck. Like he will need to take out a restraining order to keep me away from him. Because if you're gonna use me on your show, then I want on there. I want on full on. I want a spot.
So Vince Russo is now gonna have a queue of specky guys to piss in his grave. Good stuff. Fuck you, Russo. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. I hear voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me. You got your rules and your religion, all designed to keep you safe. But when rules start getting broken, you start questioning your faith. I have a voice that is my savior, hates to love and loves to hate. I have a voice that has the knowledge and the power to your fate. I hear voices crying, I see heroes dying, I taste blood that's trying.